And where this week is Parashas Ha'alosecha. So I'd like to begin with the parasha begins at the beginning of Parakas chapter 8. Just want to go skip down just a few sukkim to the section that starts chapter 8, verse 5, Parakas pasuk hey, which is the section dealing with the consecration of the Levites. So here we have a section goes on for around 15 sukkim, which is describing a rather detailed, elaborate process of the consecration of the Levites. And let's just read a little bit of this just to get a feeling for what it's saying here. The pasuk begins with pasuk hey, pasuk verse 5. Yedaber Hashem al Moshe le'emar, kach es ha'levi'im. Shem said to Moshe, spoke to Moshe, saying, kach es ha'levi'im mitoch b'nei Yisrael, v'tihi ha'arets ha'osam. Take the Levites from among the children of Israel and purify them. And then it gives a whole description of different things that need to be done to the Levites to purify them, sprinkling the water purification, shave off all their hair, should wash their clothing, and they should take a number of sacrifices, animals for sacrifices. And then it says, I just skip down a few more psukim in verse 9, it says, it says, V'hekravta es ha'levi'im lefnei ohel moed, you shall bring the Levites before the tent of meeting. V'hekalta es kol adas b'nei Yisrael. And you shall... I'm sorry, do you still hear me? Do you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
Okay, good. Good, thank you. I don't know, something, my computer just showed up something about being muted, so I guess that's not true. Okay. The crowd, again, Pasuk Kes, verse 9. I should really mute everybody. Just a moment. Okay. Yeah, so Pasuk Kes, the crowd says, Alevim Mishmeo Moed. You shall bring the Levites before the tent of meeting. The Ekalta is called Adas B'nai Yisrael. And you shall gather together the entire assembly of the children of Israel. The Ekalta is called Levim B'nai Hashem. You shall bring the Levites before Hashem. The Samchu B'nai Yisrael is Kedem HaLevim. And the children of Israel shall lean their hands upon the Levites. And then we had more things going on over here about waving the Levites, and they should lean their hands upon the bulls. They should stand them before Aaron, before his sons. I'm not going to read the whole section over here, but let's begin right now with a question. We have here the entire Jewish people have to be present. The Kalta of Kodaf Mitzvah. The entire Jewish people have to be present for this ceremony, or whatever you want to call it, of consecrating the Levites. And then, first of all, why does everyone have to be there for this? Why is that so important that everyone's here? I think that's already one question. And the Rashi really answers, we'll see in a second, but right now they'll just ask a question or two. Why do all the Levites have to, why does the entire Jewish people have to be here? And also, more so, what is this idea in Pasuk Yud, verse 10, of the Samchu B'nei Yisrael Zedem HaHalavim. The children of Israel shall lean their hands upon the Levites. I'm not sure exactly what that means practically, because there were, I believe, the numbers in the previous parashas, but I think there were 22,000 Levites, and there were, just from the men who were counted, there were 600,000 and plus members of the rest of the Jewish people. What exactly does that mean when it says the children of Israel shall lean their hands upon the Levites? Does it mean every one of the 603,550 Jews had to lean their hands on one of the 22,000 Levites? Unclear to me exactly what the what this meant practically. But whatever the case may be, you'll have to look around in the commentaries. I didn't have a chance to look into this. But for now, I'll just suffice to ask the question, what is the significance of this? What's the significance of the, of having the entire Jewish people there and leaning their hands on the Levites? So there are two interpretations which I saw here in the commentaries, but I think each one requires more explanation. Rashi says that the Levites were kind of like a korban. They were in a sense like an offering or a sacrifice. They were being offered by the Jewish people as a sacrifice. Obviously, it's not a human sacrifice in the sense that they're going to be slaughtered. That certainly we don't have in the Torah such an idea. But here they were being given or something like that by the Jewish people as a kind of a korban, as a kind of a sacrifice, and therefore just as by with the animal sacrifice we find this idea of leaning on it. So the same thing applies to the Levites. That's what Rashi says. I think that itself requires explanation. Even by a carbon, we have to understand what's the idea of leaning on the carbon, and what sense were the Levites like a carbon? How do we understand that? And I saw here in the article they bring another interpretation from the Chizkuni, which I think was also one of the early commentators. If you have the Stone Chumash, it's on set page 777 on the first paragraph there, where they bring the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni mentions that we find the concept of leaning in another context also. Where do we find one human being leaning on another human being? So he mentions that we find it later on in the Torah regarding, it says, Moshe leaned his hands on Joshua. And that was a kind of way of elevating Joshua to a position of distinction. That's the way they quote it here. So Moshe elevated Joshua to a position of distinction by leaning on him. So too, the Jewish people were elevating the Levites to a position of distinction by leaning on them. Now, that's a very interesting connection, but I think that also, if we think about it, it sounds somewhat difficult. The comparison sounds somewhat difficult because Moshe leaning on Joshua seems to indicate an idea that Moshe, who was the leader, was now giving over some of his leadership abilities or qualities or something like that to Joshua, or he was passing the torch to Joshua or something like that. So Moshe had something. He had this ability to lead the Jewish people. And by leaning his hands on Joshua, he was somehow transferring to Joshua that elevated position that he had. He was giving it over to Joshua. Here we have the Jewish people and the Levites. It seems that the Levites are being given a position, but the Jewish people didn't have that position before, seemingly. So maybe we had the idea that the Bechorim, that the firstborn, had the position before, but the entire Jewish people, presumably, they weren't like the Moses and the. In what sense? Maybe we could ask it this way: in what sense were the Jewish people like the Moses and the Levites were like the Joshua? It seems like the Jewish people were not giving over something to the Levites that they themselves had before. So how does that parallel work? So what's the connection to a sacrifice? What does leaning on a sacrifice mean altogether? And what's the connection to the sacrifice between the Levites and the sacrifice? What's the connection between the Levites and the idea of Moshe leaning on Joshua? What is the idea of Moshe leaning on Joshua? And what's the idea of the Levites? How is it connected to that? So both of these interpretations, although they give us a certain context of where we find this concept of leaving in different places, but it's still difficult to understand how to apply those principles. What exactly are those principles, and how do they apply to our circumstance? That's the first question I want to ask. Now, excuse me. So the pasuk continues over here. The psukim continue, and they talk. I'm not going to read through the whole thing. It's about 15 psukim, but it continues here, and it talks about how you should separate the Levim from among the children of Israel. The Levites shall remain mine. And then it says, let's talk about the firstborn here soon. And then it continues in Pasuk. I just want to read here. Pasuk Yud Tes. I'm sorry. Pasuk verse 19 here in chapter 8. The Pasuk says like this. Vo'etna es alevim nesunim la'aron ulevanos. I assign the Levites to present it to Aaron and his sons. Mitolch b'nei Yisrael. From among the children of Israel. La'avod es avodas b'nei Yisrael b'o'el moed. To perform the service of the children of Israel in the tent of meeting of Lechaper al B'nai Yisrael, and to provide atonement for the children of Israel. The Lord of the B'nai Yisrael, Meges, Begeshes B'nai Yisrael, Al HaKodesh, so that there will not be a plague among the children of Israel when the children of Israel approach the sanctuary. So Rashi here points out that in this one verse, the phrase B'nai Yisrael, the children of Israel, appears no less than five times. Five times in this verse. So Rashi points this out, and which he quoting a Medrash, that the Medrash says, why does it say five times the name on this pasuk? Lohodiachi bason, in order to let known the how beloved the Jewish people are. Again, this concept which we had earlier regarding the counting. Here we have it again, regarding how beloved the Jewish people are. That they're mentioned the same number of times in one pasuk as the five books of the Torah. Five times, the five books of the Torah. That's what he said. So that's an interesting thing. But the question is, what is this doing here, just in this context? If Hashem wants to show us how beloved the Jewish people are, they can be mentioned five times in one pasuk, so there are many, many choices which pasuk they can be mentioned five times. Why are they mentioned five times just here in this context? And if we think about it, it sounds even somewhat inappropriate here, because in this context, the Jewish people are not the subject. They're not the star of the show, so to speak. It's the Levium. This whole section about is about the consecration of the Levites. So why are we mentioning the love of the Jewish people just here? Now, there is one way to possibly say it, which would be to say that the pasuk is telling us that don't make a mistake. Don't think that just because the Levites are being given the spotlight here, and not just the spotlight, but they're being given some elevation, that somehow should think that the Jewish people's significance is not so great. So not just specifically here, where the Levites are given the spotlight, we're being shown five times the Jewish people, that the Jewish people deserve to be compared to the five books of Moses. We could possibly say it that way, but I think that it actually goes, I think maybe we've spoken about this in some years past, that it actually goes much deeper than that. That specifically here, this is the place where it's most appropriate to talk about the love of the Jewish people and their connection to the five books of Moses, and we try to understand how and why. And I'll just to along the same lines as this issue, I just want to point out something very striking. I was just reading through this section before. Okay, in this one pasuk, we have the word B'nai Yisrael five times. But the truth is, in this whole section, which runs for about 15, 17 psukim or so, from pasuk 5 through pasuk 22, this whole section that talks about the Levium, the word I counted, and maybe I missed one or two, I don't know, I counted the word B'nai Yisrael, I believe, at least 10 times. I think I counted it 15 times. If you go all the way to the beginning of Pasha, you'll see, just if you read these books, you'll see over and over again, it mentions the B'nai Yisrael. So I'm going to Pasuk 6. Tachas Levim, Mikolos B'nai Yisrael. Take the Levites from among the children of Israel. Those words itself sound a little bit superfluous. Where else are you taking them from? Take them from among the children of Israel. And then again, in Pasuk 9, it says to gather all the children of Israel. In Pasuk Yod, it says the third time, some could B'nai Yisrael is your Dayan. In Pasuk Yod Aleph, because again, you said the B'nai Yisrael from the Jewish people. In almost every Pasuk, it mentions B'nai Yisrael again. I mean, we have to speak some way out. In Pasuk Yod Aleph, Pasuk 14, you should separate them, Mikos B'nai Yisrael. In Pasuk 16, it says, Mikos B'nai Yisrael, and it gets up again, B'nai Yisrael. And then in Pasuk 17, again, B'nai Yisrael. And Pasuk 18, again, B'nai Yisrael. And Pasuk 20, again, B'nai Yisrael. Pasuk twice, whatever, if you count, I didn't count all of it. But it's over and over and over again, these words, B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael. It's striking. It's not just five times in this pasuk, but I think it's another, at least as many, probably another 10 times, just in this general context. Why are we mentioning B'nai Yisrael so many times? All right, Cassandra. I muted you. You have to unmute yourself. I can't hear you.
I counted at least 17, and that's just glancing at it.
Oh, okay. Thank you. So my count at least 17. So we have many, many, many times the word B'nai Yisrael over here, and again, the B'nai Yisrael don't even seem to be the subject. If the subject was Levium, and it mentioned Levium 17 times, I don't even think it mentions Levium 17 times. That someone else is going to have to count. I think it says the word B'nai Yisrael here more times than it says the word Levium. But even if it wouldn't be more times, the subject here is Levium, not B'nai Yisrael. So why B'nai Yisrael 15 times? 17 times, whatever the number is. So that's the question. So basically, these are the things we want to get to this evening. What's this concept of the Jewish people leaning their hands on the Levium, and why is the five times in one pasuk to show how beloved the Jewish people are? Why is it in this context, and why do we have the word B'nai Yisrael mentioned so many times in this section? So I want to discuss a concept which I think we've spoken about in the past, but the truth is in these sections, there's so much space given to the Levium. Here in this section, we had on last week's Parsha a whole section talking, and the end of Bamidbar, a whole section talking about counting the Levium. Levium actually counted twice, from 1 month and up, and then from 30 to 50, and the whole description of exactly what they're doing. Like, it would behoove us to understand a little bit better what exactly was the role of the Levium. So I think that the idea I think we can bring out, and it's very much captured by the way that the Torah instituted, where Hashem instituted in the Torah, where the Levium camped in the wilderness. Because we have the description of the camp that was in Pasha's Bamidbar more in the last couple of weeks. It was mentioned, it's only alluded to in this week's Pasha, but we know that the basic way that it's described how they camped was that the 12 tribes, not including the Levites, were camped on the four sides surrounding the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the middle. And the Levium also camped around the Mishkan, but Levium, including Moshe and Aaron, also from Shevet Levi. They also were on the four sides in the Mishkan, but they were within. There was like a box, there was a large picture of the Mishkan in the center. And then we have the four sections around, immediately surrounding the Mishkan were the Levim, and then around that were the four sections with the other 12 tribes. So the Levim were actually inside, literally, geographically, where they were located when they camped. They were literally inside the rest of the camp of the Jewish people. And we once spoke about this years ago, that I think that this is a way of understanding what the role of the Levim, the role that the Levim played in the context of the Jewish people as a whole. Because we know that Shevet Levi was part of the Jewish people, it wasn't separate. But at the same time, we find that they're very much here. It says, even here in the parasha, it says, Hashem says that I'm separating Levim from the rest of the Jewish people. So they were separate, but not separate. How do we understand what the Levim were? So I think the way we've explained it in the past is that the Levim represented the inner core of the Jewish people, meaning the 12 tribes. Each one of the 12 tribes, like we alluded to a couple of weeks ago, the last time we met, I think, each one of the 12 tribes has a certain role to play. Or each one of the three camps of the 12 tribes has a certain role to play. It has a certain specific role within the Jewish people. We said once at the time we compared it to a business that has a department that deals with accounting, and a department that deals with sales, and a department that deals with the facility, right? That's what we spoke about. So each one of the tribes has a special department that deals with. So what's the department of Shevet Levi? So the answer is Shevet Levi doesn't have a specific department. What Shevet Levi is, they represent the core mission of the Jewish people. They're the ones that guard the inner core of what the Jewish people is about, and therefore they're the ones that's represented by the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the house of Hashem, so to speak, which represents the ideals, the mission statement, the Hashem's plan for this world, and at the core of it, what the world is really all about. And what the world is about is to be dedicated to Hashem's plan for what Hashem wants the world to be. It's the service of Hashem, and that's what the Levim are doing. And that means is that Shevet Levi is not just another tribe. It's not just another department in the business of the Jewish people. But it's actually the inner core of what everything else that's going on in the Jewish people is all about. That's what Shevet Levi is, and that's represented by the fact that they camp within the Jewish people. They're not one of the 12 tribes of the Jewish people, but they're the inner core of the Jewish people, and therefore their place where they camp is within the rest of the camp of the Jewish people. That's how I think we need to understand what Shevet Levi is. And if we understand it that way, I think we can apply that idea to the concept of smicha, of the leaning. When Shevet Levi is being given their mission, they're being handed over, they're being consecrated in order that they should do their service. So that it has to be, that it has to be done in a way that shows that Shevet Levi is not just being given a mission that's not connected to or to the Jewish people as a whole. Shevet Levi's mission is the Jewish people's mission. That's what it is. They don't have their own mission, and therefore, when they're being given their mission, first of all, the entire Jewish people has to be there. It's not when Shevet Reuven was given their mission, the other tribes don't necessarily have to be there, because Reuven has something that they're doing and that the other Shvatim are not doing. Shavit Levi is not doing something that everyone else is not doing. Shavit Levi is actually doing what everybody else, they're acting as the representatives of the Jewish people to emphasize and to dedicate and devote themselves to what the Jewish people is about on the entire Jewish people. So first of all, everyone had to be there for when Shavuot Levi was given that mission. And more than just to be there, they leaned their hands on them. Now, why do they lean their hands on them? So I think that's both, that the idea of leaning is basically a way, let's start with the Rashi's case, Rashi's interpretation, that it has to do with the sacrifices. So what does it mean when the person brings a sacrifice and they leave their hands on it? So what's the idea of a sacrifice? So we've spoken about this in the past in different contexts, but one of the major ways of understanding the idea of the animal sacrifices is the Ramban Nachmanides, who he says that the idea of the animal sacrifice is, especially when a person has done something wrong, when a person has served for certain types of sin, certain types of wrongdoing, a person brings a sacrifice. What's the purpose of that? The purpose of that, says the Ramban, is that someone has to recognize that when they do something wrong, they've really forfeited their right to live in this world. Because we're here in this world to do right, not to do wrong. So in some sense, our right to exist depends on us doing the right thing. And if we mess up, we're humans, we will mess up, but we have to recognize that it's a very serious thing when we mess things up, because we really don't have any right to be here if we could do something wrong. And the way we emphasize that to ourselves is through the animal, through the medium of the animal sacrifices, which is that when slaughtering the animal and doing all those things for the animal, the Ramban says the person should think that really those things, by right, they should have happened to me. But we're being given the lease on life if we recognize that our life really it was what we were only put here. We're only given our ability to be this on this world and to act the proper way and not the improper way. So that, with that kind of idea, I think the idea of leaning on the sacrifice is to identify with it. We lean ourselves on the animal in order to kind of to symbolically give ourselves over to the animal, that the identity, our identity somehow should transfer to the animal in a symbolic way. And that way, the sacrifice will have its proper effect on us, that we should realize that what's happening what's happening to them shall happen to us. So that's a possibility. I mean, that's I think one way to understand a carbon. But if that's the case, I think the same thing could apply to the Levites and the Jewish people. Why are they leaning on the Levites? In order, again, to identify with the Levites, that really what the Levites are doing, we really should be doing. The same way what's happening for the animals should happen to us. What they're doing, the Levites, who are constantly focused on service of Hashem, the exclusion of everything else, that really represents the core of who we are. And therefore, it's not just they're the religious ones and they're doing those their things, but that's something that represents what's really going on inside of the core of the inner being of the Jew. And that's the idea of the Jewish people leaning on the Levites the same way we lean on a carbon, a sacrifice. That's possibly a connection. And then that would also explain the idea, the connection with Moses leaning on Joshua. We asked, well, Moses was the leader and he's giving over something to Joshua that he should now be the leader. So I think it's really the same thing, because the Levites in and of themselves don't have anything necessarily different than what the Jewish people as a whole have. On the contrary, it's the Jewish people as a whole that we're the ones that we're Hashem's people on this world, all of us, the Jewish people collectively, the unit of the Jewish people, we're the ones that serve the servants of Hashem in this world. But for whatever reason, as individuals, even most of the Shvatim can't necessarily express that to the fullest and most intense degree all the time, like the service, like maybe our inner core would have us do even. But we're not able to do that because of the we're put in this world that we have to deal with this world and with other parts of the facets of the world as well. But since that is who we are, so we have to give over a piece of who we are to the Levites. That's what they were doing. The Jewish people were leaning on the Levites, thereby giving identifying to the Levites and giving to the Levites a piece, so to speak, of their inner core, at least symbolically. And now the Levites can do it on the behalf of the Jewish people. And that's why it mentions B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael over and over and over again. Because we have to understand that this section is not really about the Levites. It is about the Levites. But it's not really about the Levites. It's about the Jewish people and who the Jewish people are. It's the sense that, yes, the subject here is the Levites. But we have to realize that these high levels of purity and sanctity that the Levites are being given are not the Levites' own for themselves. The Levites in and of themselves will not be able to do this. It's only because they're representing the Jewish people. That's what gives them the ability to enter into those most holy places in order, and that's what gives them the ability to relate to God in a more elevated way, in such an elevated way. It's only because they're representing the Jewish people that they're able to do that. And that's why the love of the Jewish people is mentioned specifically here. It's not just like a, you know, consolation prize that, don't worry, we love you too, even though we're emphasizing the Levites here, but we love you too. No, it's much deeper than that. The love that Hashem has for the Jewish people is because of the Levites. In other words, it's the Levites' role as representatives of the Jewish people that embody all that's great and holy about the Jewish people, insofar that they're able to have the Levites as their representatives. And that's why the love of the Jewish people, as emphasized by emphasizing the word B'nai Yisrael so many times, is mentioned specifically here and not anywhere else, because this is where the greatness of the Jewish people is most manifest. It's within the idea of the what the Levites are doing. And there's many things that we can, you know, even though today we don't have the service of the Levites in the same sense as we used to, but the concept over here, I think, is very, very important. Something I noticed something new, which I don't recall ever noticing this before in a Rashi a couple of weeks ago on Parashat Bamidbar. Many of us are familiar with the what the sages describe as the relationship, the special business deal that there was between the tribes of Yisachar and Zebulun. Two of the tribes, Yisachar and Zebulun, the Rashi and Chumash and the Torah mentions in a number of places that there was a deal, Yisachar-Zebulun deal, which is that Yisachar were the scholars. They were the ones that spent most of their time studying Torah. Zebulun were businessmen, and they made a deal together that Zebulun would support Yisachar. That Yisachar is the in order, since he's not going to be spending so much time earning a livelihood, he's busy studying Torah all the time. So the Zebulun people would pay and support Yisachar. So we have sometimes we may have a picture in our mind that the people from Zebulun didn't really study Torah much. They were ignorant, but they wrote out the check, and Yisachar were the ones who were studying Torah all the time. So I found in Rashi and Parshas Bamidbar that picture is very not accurate. Rashi been quoting based on a pasuk in the prophet somewhere. Rashi says on the section where it talks about the camping of Moshe and Moshe and Aaron and their children. He says they camped in the same area as three tribes. Again, we said the Levites were inside and the other tribes were outside. So on the same side, the east side, I think it was east, if I remember correctly, but on whatever side it was, the tribe of, on the outer part, there was Yehuda, Reuben, Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun, and right within that, their neighbors, further in, was Moshe, was Moses and Aaron and his sons. The Rashi over there says that we find something interesting. We find that Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun, they were all Gedolei Torah. They were all great in Torah. They were all Torah scholars. The tribes of Yehuda, the tribes of Yisachar, and the tribes of Zebulun were all Torah scholars, Rashi says. And because the reason why they were scholars is Rashi and Pashas Bamidbar. Mark, if you want to see it, I can tell you where it is in 1 second. Looks like you're looking for it. So it's on, let me find it here. Even. I should find where I can't, where it is. This one. Also here. It's on in the Stone Comics, it's on page 742. It's in chapter 3, Pasuk 38. Rashi over there says that that since they were neighbors of Moshe, so they became Gedolim b'Torah. Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zebulun. So that's what Rashi writes over there. So that's very, that, I found that very fascinating. The fact that the same that Yehuda were great in Torah, that was not necessarily big news to me. The fact that the tribe of Yisachar were great in Torah, that wasn't big news to me. But Rashi says that Zebulun was also great in Torah. Zebulun, the business people, they were great in Torah. So I was thinking that this is one of the lessons I think that we learn from the concept that I'm just learning about now, that there's a very big difference between how you view the tribe of, let's say you view the tribe of Levi, or let's say the tribe of Yisachar, those people that, or today we can translate it into the people today that dedicate most of their lives for studying Torah, for teaching Torah and things of that nature. So how do we view those people? Do we view them, well, okay, that's their role. That's what they do. And I don't do that. I do other stuff, right? So if we look at it that way, so then, you know, it's very clear. The division is very clear. But I think that what we see from this parsha that we just learned, we see that that's completely wrong. That it's not a question, it's not the us and them, that we're either from the Levi people that are busy serving Hashem all the time, or the other people. No, David Levi is nothing more than those people who are given the opportunity to express what everyone really wants to do, what everyone really should be doing, and everyone really wants to be doing. It's the core of the will of everyone to devote their lives to serving Hashem and to coming close to Hashem as much as they possibly can. And it's Shavuot Levi that has that, in, that's given the job as to be the representative of everyone else in doing that. But since it's real, what they're doing is really the B'nai Yisrael. It's not really about Shavuot Levi. It's really about the B'nai Yisrael. So certainly, as much as any individual Jew is able to do it themselves, they're certainly going to want to do it themselves. Because really, it's really the whole B'nai Yisrael is going to be serving Hashem as much as, wants to serve Hashem as much as possible. Just we have all other responsibilities we have to balance. But to the extent that we're able to do it, we're certainly going to do it. So the tribe of Zebulun is not just going to say, well, I wrote out the check, so I'm exempt. It's not a question of exempting yourself. You can never exempt yourself from who you are, of what you are. If we're a Jew, and a Jew studies Torah, and a Jew serves Hashem as much as they can, that's what we do. We need to have, we can't be always doing that to the same intensity I would like, and therefore we have to have Shavuot Levi, who's especially set aside to always be doing that. But that's not going to make anyone think that I don't have to do it myself, because it's something that even Shavuot Levi is doing as an extension of me, and therefore as much as, and that's what we find throughout Jewish history, even people who are busy doing other things, but as much as they possibly could, they would try to find time to study Torah, to spend time serving Hashem as much as they possibly can, as much as they can squeeze into their schedules. And that I think is a direct result from understanding that Shevet Levi is not a separate entity, but actually representing the inner core of who we all are. And I think there are other ramifications for this concept as well. But I think for right now, that's the point that I'm just going to share today. And I hope you have a good rest of the week. Thank you all for listening, and have a great rest of the week and a great Shabbos.